Washington, D.C. Acknowledge me.
Chris Russell on the Team 980.
I'm not trying to be a jerk. Ah, yes, indeed, boys and girls, children of all ages, come one, come all. It is a feel-good football Friday in the nation's capital. And, of course, beyond, always live and free. On that old Odyssey app, we're with you until 4 o'clock. Matty Ice on the other side of the glass. He's working double time today and yesterday, for that matter, so give him a break. Spare him on the phones. Not that doesn't mean don't call in, just means let the poor guy go. He's just working extra hard. But he does have his Alexander Ovechkin red Capitals jersey on. Why, you ask? I had to ask why. Woo! I forgot. While it's not the opening of the hockey season just yet for the Capitals,
it is the start of the NHL season. It's upon us.
It is indeed coming up in just moments. The New Jersey Devils. I'm sure Josh Harris has made the trip all the way over to Prague to take on the Buffalo Sabres in real live regular season, like games that matter. Capitals don't open up for another 8 days. But woohoo, we get to watch a little real live hockey during the show. I'm down. I'm game, especially after a crazy-ass Thursday night in sports and what should be a very, 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 very busy and entertaining weekend ahead. Now, should be is the key operative phrase, right? Of course, a lot of our attention, if not all of our attention, will be focused on Northwest Stadium on Sunday, which, by the way, I don't know if you noticed, Matt, like at first couple of weeks, it kind of didn't roll off my tongue. Now it's starting to feel normal a little bit. This whole Northwest Stadium corporate naming thingy, and we're so used to corporate names, it just took me a couple of weeks to go, oh yeah, that's right. It's not FedEx Field anymore. It's not Commander's Field. It's actually not even a field anymore. Yep, they removed the field. Now it's a stadium. Northwest Stadium. 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon for the Cleveland Browns and the Washington Commanders. Again, that is where a lot of our attention will be. Coming up, we'll pick the game as part of our dual Sunday Super Six Pack segment. Again, the most revolutionary, the most innovative, the most creative. We don't steal it from Fox Sports One and guys that we like with crazy hairdos. Nope. We do not do that around here. We created this. Sure. We are Hey, Jaden, shut up.
Sure.
We are marketing this. We have created it. We have devised it on our own. We have not stolen it from anybody and repurposed it and repackaged it. We're not going to lie to you about committees. None of it. None of it. But we will pick the Commanders and the Cleveland Browns against the spread. Against the spread. In our dual Super Sunday six-pack segment, in which we pick six games against the spread. And we have to do it on Friday, obviously, so the line can change, injuries can change, whatever. I mean, we don't do a show on Sunday, right? And we also rank six teams, but not six through one. No. We don't waste your time. We start right at the very top. The creme de la creme. We start right at the very top. So we will have that for you. Our one guest just canceled. So for right now, we don't have any guests, which means for right now, you are our guests at 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. And we don't do a lot of guests to begin with. I mean, I have too much to say. I think, you know, I mean, I'll just speak for myself. We had Luke McCaffrey on the other day. We had Jay Gruden on the other day. We had Sean Syed the other day from Sumer Sports. We're very picky and choosy about our guests. We don't do any of the beat people. Leave them alone because, you know, they're on a million different shows. Occasionally bring in a friend of mine here and there, what have you, a little sprinkle of this, a little sprinkle of that. But we don't do a lot of guests. So if you like three or four guests in a show, probably not the right show for you. If you like someone with a lot of energy and personality, and we like to have a little laugh or two, maybe three or four, especially on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and occasionally on Tuesdays as well, you know, then this is the right show for you. But hopefully,
this is real.
Hopefully, you will understand that we like to do things differently than any other show. Okay, we are not the same cookie cutter, you know, cut out the mold type sports talk radio. Whether
what?
That's good or bad, I'm telling you. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know. Coming up, we're going to hear from Dan Orlovsky of ESPN. That's what I like to do more of. We're going to hear from Dan Orlovsky of ESPN on whether or not it's fair or an overreaction to include Jaden Daniels in the MVP conversation. Man, I'm going to save that for a little bit later on this segment, so just hang on to that. But first, I wanted to open up with a couple of thoughts. One baseball, one football. Last night, you know, I often wonder and ask myself, do you love sports the way you used to love sports, where it was everything, where it was the only thing you thought about, where it was, you know, on TV constantly, and make no mistake about it, it is, where you couldn't get enough of it, where everything you thought about was SportsCenter and Baseball Tonight and NFL Primetime and this show and that show and watch this and consume this. And social media has changed a lot of that for the good, for the bad, what have you. And I try and watch as much as I humanly possibly can. You know, occasionally I do shut it down and I'll watch something on Netflix, or if you count wrestling, what have you, or a documentary or something like that. Occasionally, very occasionally during the football season, and I mean very occasionally, I'll watch like a cooking show or something like that so I can see all the food that I'm not allowed to have. You know, that again is usually a mid-February-ish type thing when it's snow and cold and there's not as much football on and so forth. But you get my point. But last night was a reminder of why we bleeping love sports. If you were doing nothing last night, you know, you got the kids taken care of, you got dinner taken care of, whatever else you do in your life, that's on you. And nobody can obviously see everything. But last night was bleeping awesome. Just amazing drama and theater. And you start with the Mets-Brewers, and I understand a lot of people hate the Mets because they're the big bad New Yorkers, and they're mean, and they spend all sorts of money, and Steve Cohen is everything that we loathe, and anything from New York stinks. I get that when I go on the other side of the aisle over here. You know, I get that from my guy Toby Altizer. I get that from Grant and Danny. I get that from Clary, Ryan Clary. Daris Dameron is usually pretty calm, pretty neutral, pretty mature, unlike everyone else, and doesn't, like, spread the hate of the New York Mets or anything from New York. But this isn't as much about the Mets. I mean, it is, but it isn't. As much as it was the absolute unmitigated, just amazing drama. It's a nothing-nothing game into the seventh inning. I mean, a great pitcher's duel. Quintana, the rookie from Milwaukee, and he only went the five innings. It's a nothing-nothing game. It's everything that you would ideally want from a series-deciding playoff game, right? That's what it was. The Mets and the Brewers. Game three, NL wild card in Milwaukee. Mets won game one, come from behind. Milwaukee won game two, come from behind. The seventh inning comes. The Mets make a pitching change. And well, That didn't go very well. Jose Buto gives up two back-to-back home runs, two moonshots for the Brew Crew. If you're of a certain age, you remember, like, what do they used to call them? Harvey's Wallbangers or something like that? You know, the Brew Crew, Gorman Thomas and Cecil Cooper and all those Robin Yount, all those old people. Harvey Keen, I think, was the manager's name. Harvey's Wallbangers, I think, is what they used to call them. But more commonly known as the Brew Crew. And man, did the Brewers look like they were about to advance to Philadelphia and the divisional round on Saturday. They hit back-to-back home runs. I think it was back-to-back pitches. Maybe there was a pitch in between. I can't remember at this point. After Jose Quintana had pitched very, very, very well for the Mets, six shutout innings. Again, Myers, the rookie for Milwaukee, five shutout innings. No walks on the Brewers' side. One walk on Quintana and the Mets' side. I mean, it was as good of a pitcher's duel as you're going to get, right? Between non-aces in a big-time spot. Then Jake Bauer steps up, hits a deep home run to right field. 107 almost off the bat, 405 feet, and the Brewers are up 1-0. And then Sal Frelick hits a home run. Again, I think it was the next pitch, but I could be there. There might have been a pitch in between. Doesn't matter. And the Brewers are up 2-0. And the place is going bananas, as you can imagine. And the Brewers have a nearly 90% win probability. But somebody forgot to tell Pete Alonso and the Mets that numbers and analytics often tell us the not truth, the problem, the wrong answer. That's right, boys and girls, children of all ages. Because the Mets struck back with four runs in the top of the ninth inning, including a Pete Alonso three-run home run to right field. And listen, for somebody who grew up in New York, and I know you don't always want to hear this. I mean, I grew up a Mets fan. I root for the Nationals. I want the Nationals to do well. It's good for me. It's good for the show. It's good for you. I don't want you guys being miserable. I want you guys listening to the show. I want to talk baseball. I love baseball. But, I mean, I grew up rooting for the Mets. I can't lie. I mean, I can't tell you that I didn't, okay? I went to Shea Stadium 250 times as a kid growing up. I mean, I was at the last game at Shea Stadium on the pitcher's mound, crying, tears in my eyes, on the phone with my dad, my stepdad, thanking them for allowing me to do what I wanted to do, which is become a sports broadcaster, and to be in that moment as emotional as it was. I mean, that place meant everything to me. I mean, that's where I spent my youth. Like some of you spend it in a playground or in a tree. I spent it at Shea Stadium. Okay? And by the way, I've
a
only...
A tree?
Well, you know, some of you do.
Who grew up in a tree? Never mind. We got to move on.
I mean, you might grow up in a tree house. You might spend a lot of time hanging out on a tree limb. I don't know. I mean, you've never heard of this? Anyway, neither here nor there. The Mets get a couple of runners on with one out in the ninth inning against the Brewers all-star closer, who's been awesome. He's been awesome. Williams has been great. He wasn't great last night because then he served up outer half. Pete Alonso rips it deep right field over the embankment, and it's a three-run home run for the Mets. And then Jesse Winker, remember him? That's right. Oh, Jesse Winker. You didn't see as much of the intensity because he was only here for a few months and not in a pennant chase. You saw some of it. But Jesse Winker, with the Mets up 3-2, gets hit by a pitch. He's not happy about it. He played in Milwaukee last year. The fans are booing him left and right. And remember, he had a big home run for the Nationals in Milwaukee before he was traded to win a game on a Friday night. I want to say late July, somewhere in that range. Well, it would have to be late July because he was traded at the deadline. Mid-July, somewhere in that range. I remember it being a Friday night. I remember him hitting a home run. I remember the Nationals won 2 out of 3 in that series. I remember him being interviewed and, you know, talking about how last year sucked in Milwaukee. It didn't go well for him. Obviously wound up with the Nationals. Again, this is before he got traded, and how important it was, blah, 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 blah. Gets hit. He's not happy about it. Why would you be, right? I mean, maybe there was something between former teammates. I don't know. Maybe it was just after the home run. What have you. It hurts. Jesse Winker gets hit by the pitch, steals second, and then scores on a Starling Marte RBI single to put the Mets up 4-2. And as he's coming home, and as he slides into home, he takes off his helmet and smashes it into the ground, and the helmet goes flying. And I said, God, is he intense. Man, is he lit. And, you know, the one Nationals fan that was paying attention was like, hey, man, I missed that guy in Washington. And good for Jesse. He got traded to the Mets, obviously, makes the playoffs, so on and so forth. Great. And then the Mets have to bring in one of their starting pitchers because they've already burned through their closer, who their rookie manager, Carlos Mendoza, had to bring in the 7th inning after the 2 home runs. Why, you ask? Well, because he had to stop the bleeding. He had to make sure it didn't go from 2-0 to 4-0 and an insurmountable lead. And I said at the time to myself, I said, oh, this is interesting because he's not going to be able to pitch the 9th inning because he's coming in the 7th. He'll probably go the rest of the 7th and the 8th, and they'll have to figure out something for the 9th. And I said, what if they make a comeback? I wonder who is going to be the Mets pitcher. And instead it was the tall left-hander, Peterson, David Peterson. And he allows the leadoff runner on, and you're thinking, okay, the Mets are in some trouble here. They're going to blow this just like they did on Monday, just like they have a history of doing. And instead, he gets one guy to strike out on a pitch elevated out of the zone, and then he gets the next guy to line ground right to Francisco Lindor, who runs from short to second, steps on second for one, fires a strike to Alonso at first, and boom, the Mets celebrate, and it is just off to the races, right? I mean, you would have thought, again, they would have won more than an NL wild card, but man, that was such a big win. They were so fired up because the Mets have been, they started 0-5. Nobody predicted them to make the playoffs. They started 0-5. They had to play 2 games in Atlanta on Monday in between series in Milwaukee. They went to Milwaukee last Friday, played a weekend series, flew to Atlanta Sunday night, played a doubleheader in Atlanta Monday, clinched a playoff spot in come-from-behind twice fashion on Monday afternoon, still had to play a 2nd game Monday evening or late afternoon, fly back to Milwaukee Monday night, play an early-ish game on Tuesday afternoon, came back from behind in that one, won that one, blew last night, or I should say blew Wednesday night in the 8th inning, and then had to come again from behind last night. Here's the point. This is not WFAN. This is not Mets radio or anything like that. I'm just telling you, if you love sports, you watch that game, you found out why you love sports. You couldn't help but just be intoxicated by the drama, by the just the twists and the turns, both sides, right? I mean, the Brewers are a damn good team. They were without Christian Yelich, their best player, for much of the year, and they still got to that point, and they rightfully should have probably been flying to Philadelphia last night and playing in Philly tomorrow. Instead, the Mets are, it was a reminder of why, A, October baseball is awesome, B, it was a reminder of why we love sports, and if you gave it a chance, instead of being like, Linnell, baseball's boring, baseball's too slow, and all these other knuckleheads out there that think everything's got to be lightning fast, and then you complain because it's too lightning fast and you can't keep up. It was everything. It was all the drama. I couldn't consume it enough. All the post-game coverage, all the social media coverage, Citi Field going bananas. I mean, it reminded you why you love sports. And then I was watching the Thursday night football game on my phone, and the first half was back and forth between the Bucs and the Falcons, and Kirk Cousins is doing his thing, and Baker Mayfield is doing his thing, and the Bucs have half their team because they were already out six starters on a short week and then lose a couple of other guys in the second half, and somehow, some way, had chance after chance after chance after chance after chance of winning that game. And got screwed, and screwed themselves a couple of times. We'll get into all the details on the other side. And it took a 500-plus yard performance through the air by old Kirko, who was doing that silly Atlanta swag thing after the game. And you would have thought the Falcons locker room was, again, similar to having won the Super Bowl. You know, with all the water and I don't think it was champagne. The Mets were champagne. That's a baseball thing. It was like all the water and all the, you know, celebration or whatever. And the Falcons win a game that they probably had no business winning because they were not. Despite Kirk throwing for over 500 yards, they were not the better team the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were. And yet it was punch for freaking punch for freaking punch back and forth all night long. At a dizzying pace. And the Falcons just barely outlast the Buccaneers. So the point being, and we'll get more into it on the other side, the point being, sports, man. Sometimes I wonder why I've dedicated my life to caring about something that's largely insignificant in the grand scale, that's largely about money. Sports, man. It reminds you every so often we get a night, like last night. Every so often, it reminds you of just how magical this thing that we all care about, this thing that we all love, this thing that I'm lucky enough to do for a living and talk about for a living, sports, man, on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Oh, it is a feel-good football Friday in the nation's capital. Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Matty Ice is on the other side of the glass. You are out there in Radio Land. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. So we opened up again with just a great sports night. Not anything local. I mean, there are local ties, if you will. Kirk Cousins, of course. Todd Bowles, right? The Mets, because the Mets are here a lot and because they're a division rival of the Nationals, so on and so forth. But there was nothing really local, so it was a great night to remind ourselves why sports are awesome. Coming up, is it too early for Jaden Daniels to be an MVP consideration? We'll do that after 1:30. We'll also have our dueling Super Six Packs, six games against the NFL spread, including the Washington Commanders and the Cleveland Browns. Get to some of my thoughts on that. Plus, some breaking news in the NFL straight ahead in just a couple of minutes. But I just wanted to finish up on the Thursday night game, and you can chime in, whatever. Kirk Cousins, again, this notion that he doesn't play well in primetime games, please stop. Enough. Please stop. You can look at any set of data. Stop living your life in mommy's basement. Stop living your life in mommy's basement. Stop being a number knucklehead, okay? I understand he's had some poor performances in prime time. I get it. He's also had, as I would consistently point out here, he had some great performances in prime time. A Sunday nighter against the Raiders ripped them to shreds. A Sunday nighter before Thanksgiving against the Packers tore them apart. Has he had some clunkers? Sure. You know where he's been really good? In prime time this year. Week 2 against the Philadelphia Eagles. Final drive. Last night, okay, he made one bad decision on the interception. A lot of people are saying, hey, you know, if Tampa would have knocked it down instead of intercepting it, Levante David, maybe they would have had a better chance of winning. I mean, if they would have done one of 10 things, the Buccaneers would have won that game. Yet still, I can be critical of the Buccaneers and say, man, they blew opportunity here and opportunity there. And the young running back obviously fumbling certainly hurt them. And again, Lavonte David intercepting one instead of knocking it down. Baker Mayfield missing a wide open Mike Evans for what would have been his third touchdown if he would have seen him, if he would have thrown it. The Buccaneers giving up 500-plus passing yards to Kirk Cousins and the Falcons. 550 yards overall on a night where they really couldn't run the ball. Sure. I mean, bad officiating, the face mask that apparently can't be reviewed. I thought we were making progress in the NFL by being able to review things that aren't challenged, that are obvious misdeeds, but apparently not. Apparently face masks, apparently, still can't be reviewed. Apparently. That's the word on the streets. Why that doesn't surprise me is because the NFL is filled, just like society is filled with a bunch of knuckleheads. Remember when they used to rule plays down by contact, even when there was plays that guys weren't down and they were fumbling the football and it would cost teams, you know, a turnover, a takeaway, a touchdown, a huge momentum swing? What? Because they were down by contact. And we can't review that. No, we can't review that. We got to play more commercials. We got to sell more sponsorships. We know what we're doing. The most successful sports league, I would argue, in the world. I know it's not the most popular sport in the world. The most successful sports league in the world, in my opinion, is often dumber than dirt. Is often dumber than dirt. They make mystifying, mind-blowing decisions that just don't make any sense. And sure, there was an obvious and clear face mask. I mean, my guy Warren Sharp is screaming about it, blowing it all up, doing a good job. Oh, there should have been offsetting penalties. Instead, it knocks the Bucs out of field goal position. Instead, they got a punt. So on. I got it all. And it was only a three-point game at that point. Still, I would say this. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who dropped to 3-2, and even though they didn't play anywhere close to a perfect game, that is a valiant, gutty effort from them, missing six key contributors and several guys going down in the second half. That is a valiant, gutty effort. But it's also a gutty effort by the Atlanta Falcons, who again did not play great, did not play smart. Young Hoku missed two field goals. They butchered the end of the game clock spiking situation. They got very fortunate where they could have lost and ultimately won in overtime. What a great game from an entertainment perspective, from a controversy perspective, from a back and forth perspective. And again, I would just say the Mets and the Brewers, the Buccaneers and the Atlanta Falcons reminded you of why we love sports so much and why you can't get it out of your system, why it's shooting through your veins. All right, coming up. Is it too early to include Jaden Daniels in the MVP conversation? We'll let you hear what Dan Orlovsky had to say about that because his colleague Stephen A. Smith is screaming, surprise, about that. We'll let you hear it, we'll react to it, and we'll get your calls at 301-230-0980 after a quick trending alert right here, right now. All right, so for the Commanders, according to head coach Dan Quinn, Austin Ekeler should be good to go. Brian Robinson Jr. is trending in that direction, but is a game-time decision. Meanwhile, unfortunate news for Noah Brown, the oft-injured Noah Brown, at least through the first couple of years of his career, he's already been ruled out for Sunday with a knee injury. Cleveland Farrell expected to miss his third consecutive game. Other players that were lifted off of IR into the 21-day practice window, the Commanders say they will make a decision over the weekend. They host the Cleveland Browns with our pregame coverage beginning at 9 a.m. right here on the Team 980, extending all the way through with your drive home from Northwest Stadium with the DOC taking your calls on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Meanwhile, for the New York Giants, boy, do they need a win after not getting one against the Cowboys last Thursday night. Now they take on the Seattle Seahawks on the road. Certainly not going to be easy. And they'll have to do it with outs. Star wide receiver Malik Nabers. He's been ruled out because of a concussion, which was certainly the concern after he was beat up last Thursday night by the Cowboys in all the routes over the middle of the field. And one basketball note, remember Patrick Ewing? Of course you do. Former Georgetown star, former Georgetown head coach. He's agreed to rejoin the New York Knicks, where he starred as a center for so long as a basketball ambassador. And that's what's trending. All right, before we get to Dan Orlovsky on this Feel Good Football Friday and the game preview and the keys, I got probably more than three keys, but we'll do three keys to a victory for the Washington Commanders. We'll get all the picks in. We'll get the rankings. We'll get all of our normal staples. Maurice tweets me at WrestleMania621 or on the X at Maurice4DC and says, Rooster, the Brewers-Mets game was sensational last night. But let me ask you this. I heard someone say that any team that beat the Brewers as we did in 2019 ends up in the World Series. Well, I don't know if that's true. I would have to look that up, but last year, the Diamondbacks went to Milwaukee and swept their asses. The Nationals beat the Brewers then in a one-game wild card. How do I know? Because I was there in 2019, and that was come from behind, Josh Hader style. So, Mo, you might be right, and maybe the Mets can upset the Phillies and derail the ex-Nationals brigade of Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Trey Turner. They have any other ex-Nationals that they've stolen from here in Washington? They have an ex-Met, Zach Wheeler, probably there, the best pitcher in the National League, if not in baseball. You get the point. All right, so there's that. Again, if you want to comment, chime in on just a magical night in sports, even though it had nothing really directly to do with Washington, D.C., it was just every once in a while, we get these nights where you're like, oh my God, this is why I can't, this is why my life revolves around sports, or why I invest my emotions, or I invest my money. Because I know you guys feel the same about varying different things like your football team, right? And I know you're all excited. And hopefully that excitement continues this Sunday at Northwest Stadium, and we're going to get to the game. But we already know Jaden Daniels has given us a lot of moments so far, a lot of memories so far. He's put himself clear front and center way ahead in the Rookie of the Year consideration. But is he, and should he be, in consideration for the MVP in his rookie year? Here's Dan Orlovsky, former NFL quarterback, and as far as I know, everything I can tell, big fan of Jaden Daniels. Dan Orlovsky, after Stephen A. Smith said, hey, Jaden Daniels should be in consideration, should be in the running for MVP. Dan Orlovsky said,
top three would be, I would say, Justin Jefferson, one, Sam Darnold, two, and probably Josh Allen, three.
Yes. The question isn't, is Jaden Daniels top three? Right? It's in the conversation.
I just rattled off like eight or nine.
Is it an overreaction? The question was, is it an overreaction to have Daniels in the MVP conversation? It's not an overreaction. It's not an overreaction. He's in a conversation.
Yes, it is. Until they go and beat a really good team, and he plays that way against a really good defense.
You're not consistent. You're not consistent.
Okay, I got it.
This was somebody else. You point out 82.1% right. Completion percentage. That's what you would do, and you would say a rookie
save
doing
for the
that.
Commercial
that's
break.
Extraordinary.
Beat a good team with a good defense, and then he's going to get in that conversation just like Stroud did last year.
All right, let's end it right there. Sounds like it ended right there. The opportunity is here. Knock, 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 knock. Whatever this surface is, the Cleveland Browns are a hell of a defense. Now, they're not a good team. Right, because their offense is very pedestrian. It's not bad, it's just very pedestrian. We're going to get into all that. the Cleveland Browns are a good defense. Sure, they gave up a bunch of big plays and a bunch of explosives to the Dallas Cowboys in the first half of week one. Got it. Going to happen to anybody. Sure, they gave up a couple of touchdowns to Malik Nabers in week three at home. Malik Nabers also made some outstanding grabs. Sure, they gave up some points, I guess, if you want to call it that, in week four last week against the Las Vegas Raiders without Davante Adams. They gave up 20 points. They also shut out the Raiders in the first quarter, largely because of a long offensive drive, and they shut them out in the fourth quarter as well. And granted, without Davante Adams, we all understand that, the Cleveland Browns defense held the Vegas Raiders to 268 points, 4 of 12 on third down, 55 offensive plays, gave up a bunch of rushing yards, certainly something that the Commanders can capitalize on, but just 116 through the air. I mentioned the Week 3 game against the Giants. Again, Malik Nabers made some great catches in that game. Not saying that the Browns didn't give up anything, but once again, in that particular game, while the Browns lost at home to a pedestrian offense, i.e. the Giants, they only gave up 21 points in that game. So 20 points last week, 21 points to the Giants. And again, I'll say this, week one, they gave up a bunch of big plays in the first half, gave up virtually nothing in the second half to the Cowboys. Week two, granted, the Jacksonville Jaguars stink. They went on the road in the Jaguars' home opener and won 18-13 and held them, obviously, again, to 13 points. So in the last 3 weeks, they've allowed 13 points, 20 points, and 21 points. You know, this is a good defense that Jaden Daniels is going to have to play against. Again, it's not a good team. It's a good defense. So I don't know if Orlovsky is going to walk away. If Jaden Daniels throws for three Bills and runs for 45 yards and the Commanders win, I don't know, let's call it 31-17. Does Orlovsky count that? I don't know. Because, again, the Cleveland Browns are not a good team. They are a good defense. And there is a little bit of a difference. Here's where the good team component could come in next Sunday in Baltimore. And you can't, if you're the Commanders, overlook that. So the question is this, at 301-230-0980. Should Jaden Daniels be in the consideration for the league MVP? Or is it simply too early? Should he be in the top three? You heard Orlovsky say, well, it should be Justin Jefferson. It should be Sam Darnold. I forget who he said at number three. I can't remember. Either way, he said no. The answer is no. He shouldn't be in consideration. It's too early. Is it too early? Or is it appropriate? Not that he should be the front runner. Not that he absolutely should be the MVP. Because, listen, let's be honest. As good as he's been, there are other guys that are having great starts to their year as well. But should he be in consideration? And by that I mean consideration, let's just call it what they were talking about, top three. Now, Matt, you're looking at me quizzically.
I mean, in my mind, I think that the first four games, you can absolutely say if the season ends right here, you have to put him in contention for MVP.
But when you say contention for MVP, you're talking top three, you're talking top five, you're talking top 10, what?
I would say top three.
Okay.
So far with just this first four games.
Okay.
Statistically, he's an anomaly. The offense have been chugging. They're 3-1, and everyone knows that the defense for this team is not
right.
A 3-1 team.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you agree that Justin Jefferson is in the top three?
Yes.
Would you agree Sam Darnold, which I can't believe I'm saying, is in the top three?
I would say he's, yeah.
Okay.
He's like up there.
Would you say like Geno Smith?
But here's where I'm coming. Here's what I want to say. And it's basically impossible to win the MVP as a rookie, just because there's a thousand things going up against you on top of just as people are looking at the season, they're looking at your history improvement. There's no improvement for him from the start.
Which is why this is an interesting debate, right? Because it wouldn't be interesting to say, should he win the offensive or should he win the rookie of the year? Because of course he should right now.
Where I'm coming from with this is it's more along the lines of, there needs, when you're talking about all the players, you might have your like top three, top four, whatever, top five list. There has to be an asterisk at the end of that list with Jaden Daniels is showing that he is absolutely the guy to take the league by storm and can't, like, he's that guy right now that I think.
You're talking about like a polarizing it factor type of.
Well, he has the it factor. He has the stat line, he has the wins.
But if you're polarizing, and yes, you're right, he has all that. If you're polarizing, if you're like buzz, or if you're creating a buzz around a dormant franchise, does that mean you're the MVP?
No, but having a stat line of at least completion percent, like let's just take the completion percentage over the first four games. Mm-hmm. That's something nobody's done in four games, period.
82.5%.
So we're looking at a all-time great performance through four games. Mm-hmm. If you can't look at that and say, yeah, that guy needs to be in contention for MVP, I don't know what you're doing because you're not talking about the sport we're talking about.
All right, so that's a great point. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to give you my official spin on this when we come back and I see all the lines lighting up. I know we got to get to Ronnie and Clinton. We got to get to you guys, the rest of you that are lining up. We'll get to you as quickly as we can. On the other side, want to take a quick timeout. 301-230-0980. Should Jaden Daniels be in consideration? You want to say top three, top five? I mean, top three seems more appropriate than top five, but you want to expand it to a top five, top 10, whatever you want to do. If you want to do that, you got to kind of tell me where he would fit in, who you would put him ahead of, and we'll just go back and forth and we'll discuss because if ESPN is discussing it, the world is seeing it, and it is a little bit of a polarizing issue, if you will, on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. A little Zach Brown Band for you on a feel-good football Friday. It's not football, but the Devils are up 2-0 over the Buffalo Sabres over in Prague. Yes, the NHL regular season has begun. Right out to your calls at 301-230-0980. Should Jaden Daniels be in consideration for the NFL MVP through 4 weeks? Stephen A. Smith was chomping at the bit and was, you know, yelling about it and saying he should. Dan Orlovsky, who I would always take Dan Orlovsky's opinion and analysis and say it's at least reasonable. If I don't agree with it, disagree with it, whatever, it's at least reasonable. Whereas I would generally dismiss Stephen A. Smith because it's rarely reasonable. Dan Orlovsky says no. If we're talking top three, he would say no. It sounded like if he was talking top five, he would say no. I thought he said 8 or 9, if I heard that correctly, in that bite that we played for you. Whatever. If it's 5+, okay. Maybe he's in consideration. Maybe he's an outside candidate, what have you. I would say this. For me, right now, I can't put him in my top three. Again, Jefferson, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen still belongs there. But I would probably put Josh Allen 3 or 4. I mean, last Sunday night hurt against the Ravens. He did not look great except for that one throw that he's racing towards the sideline and he fires across his body. Just an unbelievable throw. He wasn't great in that game. You know, you can't put Patrick Mahomes. Mahomes, even though the Chiefs are 4-0, they haven't done anything offensively. You can't put Justin Fields just because the Pittsburgh Steelers are 3-1. You know, you want to put a defensive player in there? You might want to put Myles Garrett. Yeah, you might want to put him in, especially after maybe what he does this Sunday at Northwest Stadium. You want to put Saquon Barkley in there. I'm not going to put Saquon in my top three, but he's in my top five. You know who's in my top three? I got to probably tip the cap. Geno Smith. 2 ex-Jet retread quarterbacks, just like you guys crap all over retread coaches. retread quarterbacks, Sam Darnold and Geno Smith, probably in my top three. Jaden, I'm going to put him right at five. I'm going to keep him in my top five. How about them apples? 301-230-0980. Let's get out to you on the phones. Say hello to Ronnie in Clinton. If I could just grab the right mouse here. There we go. Hello, Ronnie. How are you? Ronnie?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you now, Ronnie. What's going on?
Hey, it's actually Forest Hill, Maryland, up in Northern Maryland. I got two things. One, I want to give a big thumbs down to WBFF and Baltimore 45 for not putting the Skins game on at 1 o'clock. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate that.
Why are they not doing that? Are they showing another game, or is that
no? They're showing a crappy 4 o'clock game because the Ravens owner won on CBS, which you guys got Channel 9 CBS, and then Channel 5 has the Skins game on. Up here, all we got a doublehead on CBS. I get it. The Ravens are on CBS at 1, but why can't they put our game on at 1?
Yeah, I don't know the answer other than there might be territorial restrictions because the Ravens' home market, that I'm not sure of. I'm not a big TV guy. I just watch whatever. I watch whatever's available to me.
I get that. If it's territorial, then why is the Redskins at home on Fox 5, but you also on Channel 9 got the Ravens and Cincinnati on?
I don't have a good answer for you. I'm sorry.
I know the answer. It's Baltimore, and I ain't going to get into it, but I know the answer. All good. Next week, we'll see you. But I don't think he's in the top five yet, or top three. I think we're getting a small sample size. Let's see what happens these next two games against tougher defenses. And as the season progresses, yes, he is putting up astronomical numbers. And you can't even argue that. But I want to see a bigger sample size of what's going on with this kid. And I'm excited just like everybody else. And I hope on Sunday we kick the crap out of the Browns and win the game. He throws three touchdowns and we win. And next week we take care of them Ratbirds. Thanks, Chris.
There you go, Ryan. Appreciate you. Yeah, I don't know the whole TV deal. I'm not smart enough to figure all that out. But, I mean, like, ultimately, if Jaden Daniels is still kicking ass 2 weeks from now, and if he, you know, runs over the Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens, you're damn straight he's going to be in the top three of the MVP. He's just not for me right now, and I don't think that's unreasonable. He's clearly the rookie of the year, but I don't think it's unreasonable to say he's not in the top three. But I do have him at number five, I put him, in terms of my MVP rankings through four games. What about you? 301-230-0980. We'll start to make our way into the Commanders and the Cleveland Clowns. Oh, wait, the Cleveland Browns coming into town on Sunday afternoon at Northwest Stadium here on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.